Hey, everybody, welcome to Podcast 5. If you're keeping count of sitting around talking movies, it's Neil Rosen, and I'm here with Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
And Bill Bregoli.
That's me.
And the title of the show is what we do. We sit around and we talk about movies. But specifically, in addition to movies that are in movie theaters, theatrical releases, essentially what we're doing is we're looking at a lot of movies that are on demand. This is kind of like a after show to a television show that we tape earlier in the day today called Talking Pictures, which airs in New York on New York One and nationally on Time Warner Cable, which looks at the 300 movies that are in your cable box at any given time that are on demand. You probably are only familiar with a handful of titles, and there's probably 95% of these movies you don't know what they are, so we kind of plow through them and tell you what's new and what's worth watching.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to, is what
right.
My wife says.
And
she's the brains of the outfit.
Okay, and so here's what to watch and what not to watch. So I want to start out with a movie that I liked very, very much, which was a surprise, and it was called The Overnight. And it's a really wacky comedy that I did not expect anything from. It stars Jason Schwartzman and Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black. And Taylor Schilling and Adam Scott play this couple who move from Seattle to Los Angeles, and they have a young kid, and they don't really have any friends. So they're in the playground, and they're approached.
They get picked up, basically.
Yeah, by Jason Schwartzman, who has another kid playing in the playground. And he's like, oh, why don't you come to, let's have a play date. Come back to the house.
Pizza night, he says, which sounds so innocuous. It's like, what could happen at pizza night?
Then they get to this house, which is quite the house.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, how does he afford
it's
this?
It's like real estate porn. It's like unbelievable.
Right. And he's got like a foreign wife that's really
French.
Yeah, very, very attractive. And, the kids are having the play date. And then they have the dinner and, some weird, sexual innuendo stuff's going on. And then the dinner's over. And Schwartzman says, why don't you let the kids stay over? Why does our evening have to end just because the kids have to go home? Why don't we just put them to bed
I think
upstairs?
The French wife says, only in America do the children dictate when the parents leave. Which, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that is true.
Right.
And then you're sucked into this thing. I loved it as much as you did.
And it's nuts. I mean, first of all, Schwartzman is incredible. He's so out there and whacked out.
He totally reminds me of what I would imagine he's like as a regular guy.
No,
at
I
home.
Know him as a regular guy. He's a really nice guy. He's nothing
it just seems
like that.
He this is the guy he could be at home. That's all.
Well, it's kind of like a Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice for the new millennium. And Schwartzman's nuts. He's a painter. And he has these weird paintings that he does, which is a study of a part of the anatomy. There's also
a very funny title for the series of
yes,
paintings.
Yes, and there's nude swimming involved and people feeling inadequate.
There's a lot of nude stuff.
There's
involved.
A lot of full frontal nude stuff in there. But that said, it's just wacky and offbeat.
The very first scene, I think anyone who's been married and had kids, not that I have, but anyone who has, will relate to that first scene where they're trying to make love and hey, daddy, mommy.
Right.
Yes, that's true.
It's great. I mean, it's really. It sort of jumps the shark a little at the end. In other words, it has a twist that I'm not going to give away.
I like the end.
The night goes into a direction that's pretty wild. And it really was like, I don't know, it's not like any other real movie that I can think of. There was a Scorsese film with called Around Midnight, I think, or After Midnight? After Midnight. Yeah. That was about the adventures late night of a guy in downtown Manhattan.
Right.
But this is like this struck me because we have one child, as do the Rosens, and when you have kids, you make friends through your children, and this movie starts so innocently and just turns into this wild, not crazy, unwatchable debauchery, just like you're sucked along with it. And what I like about Taylor Schilling, who's the wife of Adam Scott, is that she's the voice of reason through the whole movie. She stops every now and then and says, wait a minute, we got to get out of here. She says it a lot.
I think there's a swinging vibe going on here.
Right.
And he's like, no, I've made a self-discovery. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he doesn't want to hear it, Adam Scott.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They get drunk. They get high. They do all these crazy things, as you said, in this unbelievable house. And then it has kind of a tacked-on Hollywood ending that I don't love. But
The thing that... not only are there points that are shocking and hysterically funny in this movie, but there's also points of this movie where, you know, it kind of like, if there's a lull, and there's not many lulls for like 2 minutes, I go, okay, I see where this is going. Uh-huh. And then something
then
new gets
not,
thrown
right.
into the mix that's just so wacky, you know what I mean?
Let's go buy more liquor. That's what they need. So the women go on this run for liquor.
Yeah, that's a crazy
scene.
Like,
and then
that's,
I won't give that scene away, but that scene is great. And you know what? It's not so over the top like a Judd Apatow movie. It's kind of very small. I mean, it happens at this one house. The gags aren't so enormous. There is full frontal nudity, but it's not the kind that would happen in a Seth Rogen movie. It's the kind of...
No, it's just unlike anything
I've
really
seen. It's just unlike anything, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was shot in only 14 days.
Yeah, it's...
In friends' houses.
Although this movie... The movie that you mentioned, After Hours, which is, I think, Griffin Dunne.
Griffin Dunne, yeah.
Griffin Dunne is the guy. You know, yeah, it has a little bit of that sensibility. And it also has, although the two movies that I'm going to name do not have any kind of sexual sensibility, which this movie, The Overnight, does, but like an Andrew Bergman movie, sort of like The In-Laws or
yeah.
A Honeymoon in Vegas, where it just gets, like, they just keep upping
right.
the ante.
Right.
And it just gets
like
more.
Like a little pebble gets rolled at the top of a hill, and by the time it gets to the bottom,
there's
it's
that,
this
there's that
thing.
Scene in The In-Laws where Peter Falk and Alan Arkin are meeting with this, like, insane Latin America dictator played by Richard Libertini.
Back in bowl.
And he's, like, showing these velvet paintings. Look at this beautiful art, Vince. You know, it's just, it's that kind of nutty just sensibility. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's just...
Yeah. And again, not to put too fine a point on this, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, this is something you can... Now, don't stop the podcast. Wait till it's over. But you can watch right away at home. It's on your it's on your television right now.
It's like a $4.99 thing.
It came and went very quick. It had some buzz, and I thought it was going to be a huge little breakout movie, and it got lost this summer in the shuffle. So I recommend it highly.
The other movie that we talked about this week is there's two new ones. One is called Z for Zachariah. Now, you really liked that, didn't you?
I haven't seen it, so.
I liked it. I didn't really like it, but it's kind of an end-of-the-world apocalyptic movie about a woman who's living on a farm in what seems to be the last sort of nice part of town in the planet. And into her life, we're led to believe there aren't many people left living, and into her life stumbles, at first, a black guy played by... Chiwetel
Ejiofor.
Ejiofor.
12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave guy. Amazing actor. It's a great turn
for
him.
He's amazing.
Yeah, and then Chris Pine shows up, and all of a sudden we have a kind of a love triangle, sort of, and it's about creating electricity by building a thing on a dam that they're all going to sort of help each other do. And
you made a point on the show today, which I really liked. The movie has this Twilight Zone twist to it.
Yeah,
and I didn't make that analogy when I watched it, but when you said it, I said, yeah, that's
yeah,
what it is.
It's kind of a one-act thing with a twisty kind of cool ending. But here's the difference.
The Twilight Zones, although there was a season or half a season where they were hour episodes, but if you take the commercials out of those, I guess it's like 45 minutes.
Right.
This is a movie that's close to an hour and a half. And problem with it for me is there's these really long stretches where there's no dialogue and nothing's really going on. And
well,
it's
that's called atmosphere.
Yeah, well,
Neil.
It is atmospheric, but, you know, and the movie has its moments, and I like the twist, and I think that Chiwetel Ejiofor and Margot Robbie have really good chemistry. Pine, he was okay, but, you know, it you have to wait a while for these moments to happen, you know? But that said, if you like sci-fi, you know, it's not several hours. It's like 80, 90 minutes.
No, and there's
it's
so
okay.
much of this end-of-the-world stuff that's just so dreadful and so unwatchable. And this, I think, is this along with an Australian film that I don't recall the name of about
well,
the end-of-the-world where the big wave is coming. There are very few is what I'm trying to say, and this one is, I think, worth seeing.
Okay, the other movie we were talking about this week is... a new documentary on Steve Jobs, the man in the machine. And
this is by Alex Gibney, the guy who just did the controversial
Scientology
thing
movie.
And
did one on the Catholic Church. He's a machine.
Elliot Spitzer. Yeah, he's pumping these docs out left and right. You know, and I thought this thing at 2 hours and 9 minutes is a little long, and it takes, as I said on the show, a little while to boot up. In terms of getting any, well, in terms of being, in terms of bringing the guy down. It spends a good hour telling you what, you know, the second coming this man was for nerds and then for the rest of us on the planet who absolutely have to own Apple products. But then, you know, there's a dark side to this guy. He was not easy to get along with. There's an interview with a guy who starts crying because he lost his wife and his family and a big chunk of his life. And he had good days with Steve and he had bad days with him. And so I recommend it, but it's a slog.
Do you think he's crying because he lost his family? Or do you think he's crying because Steve Jobs is dead? And he's
No. I think he's definitely looking back at a portion of his life that got that had a lot of ups and downs, and for this guy, more downs, and he was a casualty. He was roadkill to Steve Jobs.
Well, here's my feeling on this thing. You know, I like Alex Gibney, as you said, Bill.
Yeah,
you know,
he just makes these stocks like nobody's business.
Right, and, you know, but here's the problem with this thing for me. First of all, it's way too long. And I've seen, you know, if you read the book, there's the Steve Jobs book, and then there's other books on Steve Jobs. But when he died, every news network did like an hour special like on Steve Jobs. And there's been other documentaries about Steve Jobs.
I'm not sure they have as much of the found footage that Gibney has of Jobs in his own words saying when he was really young, talking about power and talking about there was some new stuff in there for me.
Okay, so there's a couple of things I liked in the movie. They show this cartoon, which is interesting, about how people are just like in love with Apple products. So this cartoon...
That was a huge YouTube phenomenon. I think you don't remember that. It was
right.
Like
well,
the
cartoon says,
thing on.
Will you buy my phone? I am not an iPhone, but I am better than an iPhone. And the guy goes,
I don't care.
I don't care. I just want an iPhone.
Right.
And then the other thing goes,
why do you want it? Because it's an iPhone.
Right. Well, what if I gave you three wishes, and one of those wishes is that in addition to getting my phone, I would also give you an iPhone.
I don't care.
Right. I want an iPhone.
I want an
but
iPhone.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And then there's another part.
Google that.
Right. And there's another part of the movie where it's kind of revelatory, where when Jobs is starting out with Steve Wozniak, they work on this game for, you know,
A video game for Atari.
Yeah,
isn't it for Atari?
Atari Breakout, and they
It looks like Brick Breaker. It looks like it was the precursor.
And they spend, Jobs gets $7,000. For working on
which
this.
Which Woz doesn't know.
Right, right. So
Woz thinks they got 700.
700, and Jobs gives Wozniak
$350.
And Wozniak says, you know, if you just told me, look, I need the money, not a problem. You know, like, you could take the whole thing. I was just happy to work on it.
But he also very flatly says, that really hurt. He doesn't scream, that really hurt. It was just like, he just says very plainly, that really hurt. And it was like, yeah, I guess so. And it should have been a huge precursor to what their relationship was going to be like. I guess it was, Woz stuck around for a while.
But so much of this I've seen already. I'm looking forward to the Aaron Sorkin.
Well, that's what I was just going to bring up. This is absolute, I think, must viewing for anybody that's looking forward to the Aaron Sorkin,
Michael Fassbender.
Danny Boyle, and Michael Fassbender as Jobs.
Well, that's coming out next month.
Yeah. We're going to see that very shortly at the New York Film Festival.
I'm very excited to see that. But
getting great buzz.
You know, to me, this was just too long and too much stuff. Gibney was sort of like trying to, you know, I'm gonna show that Steve Jobs isn't the martyr that we made him out to be. But you know, and he delves into this whole thing about his daughter Lisa.
Who we don't hear from except an actress reads an email or something from her.
Right, and you know that he kind
That's
of...
That's weird that they couldn't get her, and he couldn't get John Scully, the guy who took over, who he says ruined Apple, so he had to come back. And I can't believe Scully didn't want to go on camera, so I don't know what happened there.
I think it's kind of a flawed documentary. I think there's better stuff to see on him, and I highly anticipate seeing the Aaron Sorkin one, because I love Aaron Sorkin.
Well, again, I think this is good for that. I mean, I think you should see this if you... You know,
but haven't you seen all this stuff already, Bill?
Nah, not so much. I mean, not everything. No, I didn't come away with that. I came away with there are a couple of people missing from it, and it takes an awful long time to start to bring him down. I think he could have moved a lot of the second act up a lot sooner and gotten to Foxtron or whatever that company in China is called where people were dying. And
listening to you guys got me thinking, I'm so tired of Steve Jobs being built up so much. That I want to see something where he's brought down, and maybe I should just watch this with a remote control in my hand.
Yeah, and go to the last hour and 10 minutes. Yeah.
But you know, it was interesting. But again, this wasn't revelatory to me. They show you an early computer, I mean, he didn't invent the mouse. He didn't come up with the concept for the mouse. They show you an early computer in the beginning of the movie. That is basically the Apple operating system, the whole way, not the operating system, the way Apple works, with a mouse and a cursor and you move it around. And, you know, he kind of took that idea. And I don't know. I wasn't dancing over the film. I just think that I just remember when he died, CNN and Fox and ABC and everybody was devoting an hour to, like, you know,
so
Steve
you knew
Jobs.
The story. So yes. What you're saying is you knew the story.
I think
what we're saying for anybody who doesn't think they know the whole story.
If you don't know the story,
is this
check
fills it
out.
I mean, we had the same situation a couple of weeks ago with the Orson Welles documentary, which I thought was a very good documentary for anyone who didn't know Citizen Kane was made by the same guy that made Touch of Evil, or had the same guy that was in Touch of Evil.
Or the guy that did magic tricks on Merv Griffin.
Or the voiceover for
wine commercials.
For Bird's Eye. Yeah, for Bird's Eye.
Paul Masson.
Yeah, Paul Masson.
So, we will sell no wine before it's time.
Do you ever hear the outtakes on that?
Yeah, that's amazing. In fact, go to that.
Have you ever heard that?
After you watch the movie we suggested,
like
which
the
is the overnight.
It's on YouTube.
It's Orson Welles basically being directed by three British directors and constantly stopping and going, why are there three of you? I take direction from one person. We know a fjord in Norway. Why do we know a fjord?
We don't
know the fjord. Like, he stops and starts pulling the copy apart and going nuts.
Right. Well, what happens, the one that I remember is, I mean, we're talking about Orson Welles. I mean, arguably, well, certainly one of the greatest directors who ever lived. And, you know, Citizen Kane is AFI, the American Film Institute, is like number two or number three of the greatest. I think it's a masterpiece. And it just influenced, even today, so many movies. So you got him, you know, he's at the end of his career and he's looking for money and he's doing, like, stupid voiceover commercials to make money.
Right.
And, you know, and people are trying to direct Orson Welles, which is just nuts. And yeah, and he just goes off and he goes nuts. You idiots, you don't know what you're doing. You know, you're telling me how to do the, you know.
And he's just, you know, suffers no fool and just can't believe the copy he's reading.
Before we move away from Orson Welles, which was not a planned topic today, there was an interesting story about Orson Welles. We did a movie. What was that movie, Bill? It was a sci-fi movie, and it never got made. It was a documentary.
Oh, right.
It was a documentary. It never got made, but then somebody else
made it. The guy who was
going
to do Dune. It was Jodorowsky.
Yeah, Jodorowsky's Dune. Which is a great documentary. You should see this documentary about, they did make a movie, Dune, and it wasn't too good, but this guy Jodorowsky was going to make an amazing movie, and all these other movies...
David Lynch, by the way, ended up making the film.
Yeah, but all these movies, and they show you, like, storyboards of, like, from all these known science fiction movies, and you see the costume and the shot, and it's exactly the same from the storyboard in Jodorowsky's Dune, which never got made. But the thing is, Orson Welles was going to be in this movie, they went to Orson Welles, and they found him somewhere in France, and he was at his favorite restaurant, and he says, I don't do parts in other people's movies very often. And they said, well, I tell you what if we fly your Orson Welles was like, was it like 400 pounds in his...
In one leg.
In the end there. We'll fly your chef over, and we will... he will be on the set every day and make you your favorite. Okay, fine, I'm in. So there's an Orson Welles.
You want to hear my favorite Orson Welles story?
Sure.
He goes to the same restaurant every day in New York. In Los Angeles, and they sort of take care of him there. They obviously feed him well, but he is sort of kept away from tourists and stuff. And one day, a little woman from Kansas City walks up to him, and she says, "Mr. Welles, I'd like to ask you a question." And the maitre d' comes over, and Welles shoos him away. Takes a liking to this woman, and she says, and he's heard every question about Citizen Kane. She says, do you realize at the beginning of the movie, when you utter the word rosebud, there's no one in the room to hear it? So Joseph Cotten couldn't tell this story to everyone else, and he gets white, ashen face, and takes her by the arm and says, no, I didn't, and don't you ever tell another living soul.
Orson Welles, well. Speaking of Orson Welles, here's a topic that has nothing to do with Orson Welles.
Nice. We're really good at the segues here. That's
yeah, I was trying to segue, and I'm going
sitting around talking with no segues.
This has nothing to do with Orson Welles.
What are we going to talk about?
We're
going to
talk about the summer is now over. Labor Day just came and went,
right.
And let's take a look back at the summer. I mean, like, there were some real big bombs this summer. Some of which I thought were pretty good. Like the
well,
biggest bomb.
Pixels isn't one of those. That you
no, well, I hated that movie, and actually, it wasn't as bad. It wasn't as bad as
no, it was. Other, whatever you're going to say.
No. There's worse Adam Sandler movies. The one where he played the girl, the sister, the brother
yeah.
and sister.
Oh, yeah.
Like what's the name of that one, Rigoli?
I don't remember.
That was pretty bad. Little
Judy
Nick
and Judy.
Yeah, little Nicky was worse. Yeah. I mean, they're all worse. Adam Sandler and those grown-up movies are worse. But this was pretty bad.
I thought I made a good Shaitan because Shaitan is a guy named Little Nicky.
But it's apparently going to lose $75 million. And
yeah.
That stunk. That was just terrible. And that was a hit for Sony. And Disney lost on this movie, which I liked, called Tomorrowland.
Well, you're the one.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it didn't really. I mean, and you know, there's a guy, Clooney, who's like, he's bulletproof. I mean, he's, they love him in Hollywood. He's not box, even if he's box office poison, he's still like royalty in Hollywood.
Poison.
No, I mean, in this he was. I mean, this.
Even in this, even before this came out, I remember hearing him during a press conference saying, I wonder about Disney putting me in a summer movie.
Well, apparently it's going to lose $120 to $150 million for Disney. And I like the film. I wouldn't see it as an adult, but I think if you have, like, what's the term, YA, young adult, if you have, like, a teenage kid. One of our producers here at Talking Pictures, Kevin, loved it, took his kid. Kid loved it. You know, I mean, I think it's a good kids film. I don't know why it did not do well at the box office.
I think there was a lot of expectation. I think it had a huge budget, and they were worried about not recouping that. And so they start to talk about, Hollywood gun. A lot of the people in our business are gunning for. They'll be great when something's a success, but if they smell any whiff of failure, they start to. It's like chum, and I think that's what happened there.
Yeah, but you know what happens though? It's like, you know, people. I mean, we're critics, so we can tell you critically if a movie is okay or if it's not okay. But you know, something like Tomorrowland. You know, I mean, everybody will write about, like, oh, it was such an awful movie and it tanked at the box office. And I don't think it is an awful movie.
No, you're right. I mean, that's not fair.
And they're just
going to
say, like, oh,
it
lost a little so much money. What a mess. We're not, you know, whereas something that's.
Well, let's agree on what.
Stunk, which is the Avengers movie.
Fantastic Four and Aloha. Yeah. Those are the other big.
Well, Aloha was an awful movie. I understand why that did not make money. I mean, you know, I could understand logically why Aloha didn't make money. I mean, I thought Bradley Cooper's
and
character
Fantastic
wasn't
Four.
Endearing. I thought Emma Stone's character, she was a little better, but she wasn't so great.
Was
and then Rachel McAdams, the whole thing didn't work for me. You know, I mean, as somebody said on the show, it's like they all wanted to have a vacation in Hawaii for 3 months, so let's film a movie in Hawaii.
And how often do you get to say this statement? It's a bad Bill Murray movie, or Bill Murray doesn't save it.
No, but he's not in it for that long, even to save
right,
it.
But I mean, he's normally the high point of something even bad, and even in this one, he's not.
So what's the matter with Fantastic Four? Why doesn't anybody, forget about whether you liked this particular movie or whether you didn't like this particular movie, Fantastic Four, which is basically the anchor to the Marvel franchise. It's the, I think it's the original.
I think that's the problem, though.
It's
I think
the original
the
Marvel comic.
I think that
isn't it?
Is the problem. It's got too many of the characters in it. Look at all the other successful
look at
Marvels.
Avengers. Avengers has all those characters.
But they also split them up, and they also made them as original movies simultaneously or before. So, for example, you didn't have Iron Man in everything until the Tony Stark movie was established. And I think what they should have considered doing was approaching
maybe
the material a little differently.
A flame on, flame off guy movie?
Maybe.
The Invisible Girl, the Thing movie?
It has to be better than what they tried.
And origin thing, stories are always death. They're so slow.
Let me ask you something. Thank God, Andrew Garfield is not going to be returning in the new Spider-Man movie.
I found another Englishman that took his
place. And I
thought
he was terrible. And I love the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, even the third one, which nobody likes. And I thought Andrew Garfield was terrible. So now they're going to cast a new guy. If they didn't do it already, they might have.
They got a new guy.
So there's a new guy. Are they going to go do the origin story again, Bregoli?
I don't know.
I mean, come on. I mean, again with, like, the guy gets bitten by the radioactive spider and gets the web powers. I mean, they did it, like, not that long ago with Tobey Maguire, and then they started the whole thing over again with Andrew Garfield. That was, like, 3 or 4 years ago. Are they going to do it again?
It kind of worked for Superman. I mean, that reboot, even though I hated him, was
considered
successful.
Yeah, but the
origin
movie on Superman was in the 70s. And they didn't go back to that well for 40 years later. You know, the one with Marlon Brando and Christopher Reeve and, You know, and this time you had Kevin Costner playing Pa Kent, and you know, and that guy from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which what's his
Cable.
Name?
Cabell, well, Henry.
Yeah, Henry Cavill, who I thought was awful. But I like the Superman movie that nobody liked, the one that was done by what was it? The one right before the Superman movie. Bryan Singer.
Bryan
Singer directed movie. I thought that was a pretty good one. So Pixels lost money. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. lost money, as you were saying. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. lost a lot of money.
Yeah, that's another another movie that if you didn't see it, it's easy to say it was a stinker, and there were some bad parts to it. But overall, I thought it was kind of entertaining.
Fine movie. The problem
I didn't
have,
like
the
movie
thing
at all.
With this summer, I want to use a baseball analogy. It was all home runs and a couple of very few singles and doubles this summer. Movies that were okay and worth seeing.
Or complete strikeouts that we're talking about.
Yeah, it was either home runs or strikeouts. That was it for this summer.
Well, let's go on the opposite end of the spectrum. They say that Jurassic World wound up doing that.
How many billion did it just cross?
That
1 billion just in foreign sales.
Yeah.
The experts said that it would make 60% of what it wound up making opening weekend. So, and it is now on the all-time box. What is it, Bregoli? On the all-time box office
list, it's number two.
Number two of the all-time highest-grossing films ever. And what's number one? Still, is Avatar is number one?
Yeah. Okay. Not adjusting for inflation. You always have to add that in.
Well, if you adjust for inflation, it's Gone with the Wind, I think. But the point is, what accounts for that? I mean, you know,
I think it's sad, actually.
It was an okay movie.
Yeah,
but you know,
okay.
Was it okay?
Is the key word, and I think that people understand it's the McDonald's of movie making. I mean, it's a formula; they get it. They want to come see it. They understand it. It's always good. Is what's going to happen, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it just feels to me like we don't have a chance of having anything that isn't established. I'm surprised that Avatar.
There's going to be more Avatars coming out.
That's going to and probably one of those will bump the Jurassic movie off the.
Yeah, well, that's what it is now. You know, I mean, but I mean, nobody, including these experts, could have predicted the amazing windfall that Jurassic World had. I mean, it's crazy.
Nobody had heard of the director. They threw it to almost unknown.
I mean, is it
this one good movie?
I mean, and it's not like. You know, there was only one Jurassic Park movie. I mean, how many of those were there before they did the reboot kind
three
of thing?
Or four?
Three, I think.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. And is what's his name now? I mean, how much of this do you attribute to the star of the movie?
good. This is good. You can't think of his name.
I'm blanking on his name.
And we're the professionals. We're sitting around talking movies when we know the movies we're talking about.
I know. Well, he's big now. You know. Come on, McCuddy. Tell me the name of this guy.
He's really big. No, I know it.
Okay, his name is Chris Pratt. I just looked it up for all those thinking that I'm not gonna.
Well, you took
cheat.
The words right out of my mouth.
No,
I
think
about
that's actually
Pratt.
A good example of this whole phenomenon. Here's a movie made bajillion dollars, and you can't even name the star.
I know. Yeah. Well, do you want to know that, whether you believe it or not, that Harrison Ford, before he became, you know, Star Wars, people weren't like, oh, look at this Harrison Ford. People had that same problem. I remember going back to that, they could not place Harrison Ford's name in Star Wars was the highest grossing film, you know, after it was out for like a number of months. But how much of this are they going to attribute to, like, Chris Pratt? I mean, are they going to say, like, oh, look at Guardians of the Galaxy, and look at...
Well, they're doing another one of those, and Pratt is good in both of those. I just think...
So now
you know,
is
the
he,
reason
is
we
he, are they looking
the,
at him...
A the reason we couldn't think of the star is obviously that the stars are the dinosaurs. I mean, it's a movie that's... It's a concept bigger than any actor you can put into it. So that's what's always going to be at the top of the grossing movies. The big idea... Not the big name. The big names, that was in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and a little bit in the 70s. Now it's all about the big idea.
Yeah, George Clooney was a big name.
George Clooney was a very big name, and nobody cared about tomorrow. But how did George Clooney's movies do at the box office, generally speaking? He does a lot of political stuff, you know.
Yeah, there are no huge blockbusters in that list.
But he's
on
his
resume.
He's a movie star.
He's
loved
Hollywood,
in Hollywood,
he's Hollywood royalty.
Hey, he directed a movie called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which looked at
he's directed
Chuck
several
Barris,
movies, yeah.
You know, where Sam Rockwell played Chuck Barris, the guy who created The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game, and The Gong Show.
He did
that was a great movie. You know, he's in it very briefly. And on that note, concludes the fifth podcast.
What will we be talking about next week, Neil?
What will we be talking about next week, Bill?
Well, a movie that sounds funny to me is called Cooties that we're going to see about kids who turned into zombies.
Absolutely right. We're going to talk about a movie called Time Out of Mind with the new Richard Gere movie.
Where he's a homeless guy. And we're going to talk about one of my absolute favorite movies of the year.
I'm going to watch it.
But Groly likes it too, Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson movie.
Yeah.
Hey, if you like the podcast and if you enjoy it, you know, we've got to get more social media savvy here at Sitting Around Talking Movies.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you are, social media savvy, the old expression is tell your friends, tweet it out there, put it on Facebook, figure something out, help us out because if you like it, we'd like more people to hear it. And that's our request.
That seems fair.
That's our request to you.
We're here for you if you could be here for us.
So on behalf of Bill Bregoli, and who runs the board as well as chiming in very astute comments, and Bill McCuddy and myself, Neil Rosen, we'll see you. That's my TV back. We'll talk to you next time on Sitting Around Talking Movies. Thanks for listening.